Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
It's 3 o'clock on a Patriots Monday. That means we'll put a pin for the moment in the three-point stances because we're going to go to the phone lines, talk to our buddy Marcus Jones, Patriots captain, return man, and a man with a victory under his belt. How are we doing this week, Marcus?
Doing good. How are you?
We're good. There was a lot to that game yesterday. Obviously, the end result is you get a victory, but as a guy, you're on defense, you're on special teams, you're kind of slugging it out with the Dolphins. Are you, when you're in the midst of it, are you appreciating how crazy a game is when it's playing out like that?
Man, you know, being in the National Football League, you know, there's highs and lows. You know, they have playmakers and everything like that, and every team that you face, you know, they're going to have playmakers, but at the end of the day, I'm just proud of the guys. You know, we talked about the situation of not being front runners, which Graves always talks about and everything. And, you know, to come out with a dub, especially with all the situation that was going on that game, man, I'm proud to be a part of this team for sure.
So, Marcus, what would you say was the key to stifling the Dolphins' offense early on? And then what did they do to confuse you guys or, with all their speed and motion, get back into the game and take a lead?
Yeah, the main thing that we always knew was, you know, we got to know where, you know, their playmakers are, you know, 24-7, you know, trying to make it kind of difficult for Tua and everything. And, you know, they made adjustments down the game and stuff like that, and we did too as well. So that's kind of how the game, you know, went about.
When you look at Tyreek Hill, I remember over the years talking to guys like Devin McCourty, like you can prepare for some of the speed of these guys, and then when you see it on the field, it's just like, wow, it opens your eyes. And there had been talk, at least down in Miami, that maybe he's lost a step. Why wasn't he hitting big plays anymore? What did you see from Tyreek Hill, who obviously hit you guys on a couple plays there?
Yeah, he's a great player, first off. You know, he has speed that you can't really see to the fence. And everything, and you have to know where, you know, he is at all times, and also know where Waddle is as well. So, you know, that's the main thing we try to do is, you know where they are 24/7 and then kind of go from there and just communicate it.
Special teams obviously played a massive factor in yesterday's game as well. Your punter was on his game, averaging 68 yards a punt. Obviously, they returned one to the house, and then you guys answered serve immediately. What was going on with Jeremy Springer and special teams on the sideline with everything getting crazy there, and how happy were you for Gibson to take one back to the house on a kickoff?
Yeah, I was definitely happy for Gibb, man. Coach always talks about it just in general, Braves. Like, he was like, you know, special team has to be a big role for us, and you know, they had a great return, you know, the score, and then like I said, we responded. And that's how the game is, especially in the National Football League, man. It's always how you're going to respond after adversity.
Patriots defensive back and team captain Marcus Jones here with us on WEEI Afternoons on a Patriots Monday. Speaking of that kickoff return, are you worried about losing your punt return job? Because Coach Vrabel looked like he's got some wheels out there. Is he faster than you?
No, I'm not worried about that at all and everything. I'm just glad, you know, he ain't pulling nothing because it looked like he was running pretty hard. But, I love the excitement from Braves. You know, he's been in the league before. You know how hard it is to win and everything. So, you know, just seeing him, you know, be that excited and everything like that has us, you know, happy to be a part of it as well.
Marcus, in the second half yesterday, I saw you make a tackle and – you know, you're not the size of Robert Spillane, we'll say, but you absolutely laid the wood on someone. You know, might have been the hardest hit I saw somebody in the secondary lay on someone yesterday. What kind of pride do you take in it being such a hard hitter and a fundamental tackler back there in the secondary?
Yeah, it's very important off the fact of, you know, knowing where your health is and knowing that you can't take shots on the glove. know, big shots on, you know, guys just coming down the field. But at the end of the day, it's like usually with the last line of defense. So it's like whenever you do have a ball carrying coming down the field, you're like, you got to get them down, you know, whatever it takes and kind of go from there. So, you know, I just pride myself on trying to make sure to, you know, take the right angles and then kind of go from there.
Marcus, I don't know if you know this, but you were the only player on defense who played all 57 snaps yesterday in that humidity and heat of Miami. How did that feel? Did that test your conditioning a little bit?
First off, like, I didn't even know that. Like, we don't really know the numbers and everything like that until we go over it. But it was a little bit more humid than Foxborough, I would say, for sure. But it was great just being out there and, you know, being able to, you know, do the 100% snaps. I don't think I've done that in a minute, but at the end of the day, like, it was a little humid and stuff out there, but it was just great to be a part of it for sure.
Miami had some success once they adjusted and started hitting you guys over the middle of the field, especially with running back Devon Achan. Is the middle of the field and tightening that up probably or likely to be a point of emphasis going forward?
I would say people that we, you know, it's a copycat league. So now that we've shown that on film, so now we also have to think about other teams, like, you know, we're going to play in the future and be like, hey, you know, whenever we are running these type of coverages or you see this on film, they're going to try to attack it. So it's just like whenever you put stuff on film, you got to make sure to have a response to it.
One of the things it feels like we talk to players about, especially defensive players, about early every year is tackling. Tackling probably was not at its best yesterday for you guys as a team. Is that early in the season? There hasn't been a lot of live tackling. Is it difficult to improve on tackling as the year goes on? How do you deal with poor tackling and get it cleaned up?
Yeah, the main thing that I would think to, you know, help out with the situation of tackling is just practice. You know, we just got to work on it more at practice and everything and just get a little bit more attention to detail, you know, facing the back hip and knowing, you know, a lot of guys that like to cut back and things of that nature. So that's the main thing I would say is, you know, just hopping on it at practice. We do, but we just got to do a little bit more emphasis and just kind of go from there.
Okay, how much of the plane ride and return home was celebration for getting Coach Vrabel's first win, for getting the team's first win of the season? And then at what point was it like, okay, hey, we got one. Now let's turn our attention to next week.
Yeah, whenever we were in the locker room, man, I was just excited for the fact of, you know, Vrabel getting his first win. Yeah, that was great to be a part of. And then also, you know, just celebrating with the guys in the locker room. You know, like I said before, it's hard to win in this league, but whenever we pretty much got on the plane, it's like, all right, now we got to get back, do what we need to do, and get ready for next week.
Speaking of next week, before we let you go, we got to talk about the Steelers, Aaron Rodgers. I know you've prepared for him before. I actually saw a comment Tom Brady said at his best, Aaron Rodgers might be the best thrower of the football ever. How does Aaron Rodgers test you as a defensive back?
Yeah, he's a veteran. You know, it ain't really much that he hasn't seen, I would say. As a quarterback, and he definitely knows a lot of defenses. He knows certain people's style, things like that. You could definitely tell that he watches a lot of film when it comes down to defenses, and, you know, there's not a throw that he cannot make as a quarterback, I can honestly say. So that's the main, you know, challenges.
All right, Marcus, enjoy the victory. Good luck this week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you so much.
That was Patriots defensive back punt returner Marcus Jones on an average at best cell phone, which appears to be an issue for some of these Patriots.
Average?
But, you know, we work through it. Hey, average. It's we all got ups and downs. Interviews, games, performances, ups and downs. Football Talk on WEEI is presented by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with the juicy Week 3 matchup between the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Marcus Jones, appreciate him joining us on a Patriot Monday. It's 3:12. You know what that means? It's time for the three-point stance. Or apparently it's not time for the three-point stance. We're going to take a quick break, come back. Yeah. Discuss a little Marcus Jones, and then get to our three-point stances here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Patriots Monday here on WEEI Afternoons. Thanks to Marcus Jones and Drake May for stopping by, at least via the phone, to chat about the Patriots' big win in Miami on Sunday. 1-1 on the season. And now it's 3:20. You know what that means, Dan Ball. That really means on a Patriots Monday, it's time for a three-point stance.
319!
Ready!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pastrnak, a hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone. A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident or don't read your rundown properly, Andy, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens son at 617-777-7777. 3:20 or thereabouts here on WEEI Afternoons. Time to share our biggest stances on the world of sports today and the biggest stories floating around it. Our order today with Ted Johnson not here is Andy Hart, then Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and then a special treat, not myself, but my man Stiz jumping into bat third here for the three-point stance today. Andy, you'll lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
100% ready.
All right. Well, I am 100% sure you get 60 seconds, which begin right now.
Yesterday, after that game, watching Pop Douglas play the slot position some, not as much as I expected, and not having nearly as much production as I expected, the old MC Hammer song, Hammer Time, was in my head, but it wasn't "It's Hammer Time." It was "It's Chisholm Time." Stop. It's Chisholm Time. I am so sick of Pop Douglas. Honestly, I said it on Friday. It was Pop or get off the pot time for Pop. Well, he went out and had one catch for 8 yards in the volume-based slot position that is Josh McDaniels' offense. It's just not working. In fact, it's now looking like Stephon Diggs is getting more chances in the slot than Pop Douglas. Meanwhile, Fitzy's guy, Ted's guy, everybody's guy, Efton Chisholm, was inactive. I'm ready. I don't know if he's great. I'm not all in on Efton Chisholm being the next Wes Welker or Danny Amendola or any of those other little white guys that came before him, but I am all in on it's just not working with Pop Douglas. I think we all got ahead of ourselves. We see the physical quickness and ability. He's just not it. It's just not working, and I can't put my finger on it why it's not working, but he's had his chances. We are now 2+ seasons into his career, 2 games into Josh McDaniels' life in that offense. It's not working, so stop. It's Chisholm time, Fitzy. You should have a parade and get the t-shirts ready.
I love the fact that you now have an acute case of diagnosed Chismania.
Yep.
Welcome to the party, pal, as they said in Die Hard. There's nothing to lose. There's everything to gain by giving the kid a start. And I would like to share with everybody from the always positive and never landmine-filled arena that is Andy Hart's Twitter feed at Jumbo Hart. Yesterday, shortly after the Patriots found a way to win 33-27, quote, "I'm starting to think Pop Douglas isn't going to have a 1,000-yard season. Through 2 games, he has 3 catches for 6 yards. The crazy thing, Andy, normally I have to make sure that I'm wearing oven mitts and like a fallout suit when I ever wade through the waters of your Twitter replies.
Thank you.
Everybody agreed with you.
That's when I knew. I also felt like I was bullying, but that's when I knew it's really over for Pop, when no one pushed back. I'm not sure of all the replies, there was a single pushback, and it got, last I checked, it had like 1,200 likes or something. I was like, oh no, Pop. I feel bad, but you've lost.
You have 1,200 likes and 66,000 impressions.
Yeah. Sorry, Pop, but you've lost. That's Patriot Nation. They've moved on from you. They're done with you. It's Chisholm time. We've all moved on to the next
thing. Any chance, though,
Andy,
the same way that last week we dared, you know, oh my gosh, is that it for Drake May? Is he not it? And then, of course, he responds with his best game to date. Any shot the pop star comes back next week and surprised you against the Stullers?
Sure, but I would say his diminishing play time isn't great for how the team feels about him. I guess it could be a matchup thing. I know some people were starting to wonder, oh, does he have an injury? Like, why is this not working? This theoretically should work. I'm just not sure he has a feel for the underneath. We talked about this sometime in training camp, and I made the comparison. You need to be like Travis Kelce, although don't drop the ball on the goal line and flick it up to a defender so they can
hand
pick
it over to the Eagles to ruin the momentum.
But his relationship and comfort in zones and settling, not settling, moving a little bit with the quarterback is so key in those areas, and I just don't think Pop Douglas has it. He's a great athlete. I think he has playmaking ability, quickness, speed. I just don't – the feel for the game, the feel for the zones and the routes, I don't think he has it, and maybe your boy Efton Chisholm does. We'll see.
Does this potentially explain last year the end of the Rams game where it looked like Drake found the right spot in the zone and he and Pop miscommunicated, leads to a game-ending interception for the Rams?
Yep.
Maybe he fell coming out of Liberty to the sixth round for a reason as opposed to, OMG, the Pats found one. I'm not giving up on him just yet, but it is a – dare I say, inauspicious start to
Well, he's had almost season. It used to be the average NFL career was 3 years. Well, he's coming up on a very average NFL career. Also, I, in my mind, had elevated him to too high of an expectation. I'll admit that. Because you just said it, Fitzy. He was a sixth-round pick. He's really not that far from being Efton Chisholm, an undrafted rookie. Like, they're not that far away in the way they enter the NFL. Undrafted rookie, sixth-round pick can be same-same late in the draft. So, it's Chisholm time. It is what it is.
Well, the body of work a year ago would have suggested that he had a trajectory that wouldn't match a sixth-round pick. That's why people were saying that before the season started.
But now it's time to give up.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that either.
Year four jump, year five jump. I mean, it is what it is. I don't want to say he's in, like, Yoshida land for me, where I don't ever want to see him even step on a field performing in his role again.
Where his presence physically makes you mad.
No, it doesn't, because he's a nice guy, nice smile. I like talking to him. I've never spoken with Yoshida. It wouldn't work anyway.
But what about the perfect running form?
Speak the same language.
I don't speak Japanese.
Yeah, no, that's actually annoyed me, the Yoshida running. Oh, look at this funny running form. I don't want to look at it. I'm looking at the second baseman field the ground ball and throw to first and get the out, because this guy never does anything to help me.
You're not saying Pop Douglas has fallen into Rusne Castillo territory, are you?
You know what he could be in? Campbell territory, where I can...
Oh, no.
There's athleticism.
Not the Campbell zone. That's like a phantom zone.
That is a great comparison, because there's athleticism, and we've seen hints of production and getting something out of him, and now I realize that neither guy is really what I need. I'm not even sure what they do, and it's time to move on from him. There's just no minor league in football to send him to.
I have to give a shout-out. I'm reading through your replies on the fly from at Pat's Godfather. Mathematically, Pop showed infinite week-to-week improvement from negative yardage in week one. Got to look at the bright side.
I actually thought of that. Like, in that world of, remember the Canadian guy that turned a paperclip into a house by just trading up? If Pop can do that, if he can go from, what was it, negative 2 to 8, so that's plus 10 yards, like that growth percentage-wise, if he does that, it's like when they tell you, like, compounding interest. Maybe he could actually get to 1,000. I doubt it.
There you go. Exponential growth incoming. He's going to be at, like, 5,000 yards a game in a couple of weeks.
I don't think so. He might be on the inactive list.
By the way, Greg Dickerson responded and said, may not get 1,000 yards in his career.
Ouch, Greg. And he accuses me of being negative? Later on, he accused me of being negative.
Greg Dickerson is a tremendous, tremendous man. We appreciate him very much.
He's a saint, even.
He is.
No.
Saint Dickerson.
Saint Dick.
Okay, we'll leave that one there before we go any deeper into that. Nick Fitzy-Stevens, are you ready?
On the subject of Patriots receivers and their 2025 contributions and potential, I very much am, sir.
Well, there's your teaser. Here's 60 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, so obviously Andy and many other Patriots fans seem to be out thus far on Pop Douglas becoming a pop star in the Josh McDaniels 3.0 offense. However, there is another receiver who happens to be making a significantly greater sum of money than one DeMario Pop Douglas. And that would be, of course, the prize, if you will, of the offseason on the offensive side of the ball, Stephon Diggs, who continues to wow and amaze people just 10 and a half months back from recovery of ACL surgery after suffering a non-contact injury October 27th last fall. Now, Stephon Diggs will not likely soon be returning to 2020, 2021, or even 2022 Stephon Diggs form, where he was catching over 125 passes for 1,200 to 1,500 yards or more with 10-plus touchdowns. However, if you look at the average of his first 2 weeks, he is actually on pace to surpass his yardage total. The yardage prop was anywhere between 750 and 850 on most propositions in sports books as well. He does have 10 catches over the first 2 weeks, which means he's also on target to surpass his catch total. Now, it seems reasonably low impact at this point, but he is working his way into a new offense, forging a relationship with a new quarterback as well. If you add a couple of touchdowns to the mix, we end up with 80-something catches, 900 to 1,000 yards, and a few touchdowns. He's not Justin Jefferson by any stretch, but he's definitely a net positive for the Pats offense.
And you could sell me on he's going to get significantly better as the season wears on. I've told you this, been around many players coming back from ACLs, and they tell you, like, just because they're back doesn't mean they're back. So it's not hard for me to envision that Stephon Diggs in November will be significantly more productive than Stephon Diggs in September. I didn't think he was going to be on the field. He's on the field. It's fine, I would say, is a way to describe it. It's fine right now. But I think he could make leaps and bounds later in the year based on he's a veteran with a track record. Yep. I feel better about him making leaps and bounds than I do Pop Douglas, who doesn't have the track record, doesn't have the excuse of the ACL, that whole thing. So, yeah, if you're going to pick one guy that I think could really increase their production as the year goes on, it's Stephon Diggs. And you're right. If you get 80 catches for 900 yards and a couple touchdowns, you got a good year out of Stephon Diggs post-ACL, 31 years old.
Yeah, nobody's going to confuse him for Ja'Marr Chase, however he happens to do in the wake of Joe Burrow now being out for 3 months. Jake Browning was actually really good with him a couple of years ago as well, so there'll be drop-off. But regardless, no one's going to confuse him for A.J. Brown, although he might actually be outpacing A.J. Brown, who's lost in that Eagles offense at the moment. But I'm glad you see the potential for him to integrate more, for him to feel better as well, and be a positive contributor on the offense.
And he also, as I said on the post-game show, and we can talk about this a little bit more later, I enjoyed that he busted the balls of the head coach, because Vrabel was the Belichickian ball buster back in his day. I think they need somebody now to sort of poke the bear that is the head coach. Apparently that's Diggs.
I'm in on all that as well. And that was something that came from last week, is everything just looked so tense, so tight. Like, guys, we're playing football. You're a team. Have fun. Like, the expectations are kind of somewhere in the middle of being a contender or not. So,
everybody was too tense. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, show me that the players like the coaches like the players, and that you're actually kind of coming together as a group versus a bunch of pieces that were thrown together.
And isn't that supposed to be, in theory, when you have an ex-player coach, positive emotion, energy, is supposed to be more a part of the equation than if you just have, you know, run-of-the-mill guy who worked his way up the coaching ladder. I think, you know, Dan Campbell is kind of the, you know, poster boy for that. But there's obviously Mike Singletary didn't go well, but he definitely wasn't emotional, and the environment was about energy and things of that nature. Vrabel is so dictatorial at times, maybe, that some of that is lost. He even joked about it. I talk about it in that podcast where he said people aren't sure if they're allowed to laugh when I say certain things.
Like, yeah, that's not going
to
work.
No, you need some leaders to kind of test the waters, dip the toe in, as Wes Welker would say, and see if I'm allowed to push back. And I liked that Stephon Diggs did that yesterday.
All right, we can leave that one there for the time being, because stepping in as our third three-point stance stancer today is my man Stiz, my behind-the-glass brethren. Stiz, are you ready?
Uh-oh.
Can't spell stance without Stan, Dan.
Wow, there you go.
No, don't That's hurt how yourself, we're starting. Pat yourself in the back. Jeez.
I'm going to bet you can't spell either.
Well, the rest of the 60 seconds is going to be a lot of fun based on that. Go right ahead.
All right, well, after Bill Belichick's, you know, lackluster debut, they lost to TCU 48-14, you guys could not wait to get into the group chat and throw bombs my way. All the jokes, all the insults, oh, what happened to your boy Bill? But the group chat's been awfully quiet these past couple weeks since losing to TCU. UNC now 2-1 on the season. In fact, UNC hasn't allowed a touchdown since their week one loss. So the defensive mind that is Bill Belichick is starting to really blossom there in North Carolina. Now, everyone knows Miami is a mess. And a lot of people, especially after Mike McDaniel's kind of bizarre press conference after yesterday's game, calling him a dead man walking. You know, he's on his way out. I think what the owner, Stephen Ross, needs to do is make the phone call to Bill Belichick, okay? Wow. Miami's record against Bill, 17-36, okay? They know what it's like to lose to Bill Belichick. How about it's time they find out what it's like to win with Bill Belichick? Bill to Miami, back in the NFL. Let's go, boys.
Oh, my God. Like, tremendous job, Stiz, because I thought it was just a victory lap because Bill beat two crappy college football teams. I didn't see that coming. Yep. That was...
I'm like the Dexter GIF now. Just
on the Hunter Henry scale of like surprise, 1 to 85, you just gave me like a 70. You just gave me a 70 there. I didn't see that coming. You believe Bill Belichick would replace Mike McDaniel with the Dolphins?
The math is math, Andy.
So is that the Bill Belichick that couldn't beat the Dolphins at the end, that same one?
Yeah.
I mean, he beat him earlier in his career. Oh, what did he have earlier in his career? Was that, that was some guy?
Roman Pfeiffer.
Roman Pfeiffer and Bobby Tom Hamilton. Brady.
That's a Earthwind Moreland.
That would be phenomenal. I think there's no chance in Hades of that happening.
Our phone lines are open.
But that would be phenomenal, Stiz. I think we've all accepted McDaniel is going to be the first coach fired. It certainly is trending.
Do they even let him get his jowls smoked this Thursday night up in Buffalo?
Yeah, you got to. You can't. I don't think you can fire a guy on a short week and throw just chaos in there. But when he loses and gets smoked in Buffalo and you have that weird extra bye week, extended week, that is when you make the change, and that is when you move on.
Andy, it's funny. Yesterday on the postgame show, you and I took not to play the parts of, you know, Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal, but we took our first early guesses at what the line would open for Thursday night, the Dolphins at the Williams. You said 11.5. I said 13.5. You know what it opened at?
Yeah, we nailed the hell out of it, didn't we? 12.5?
12.5, yeah.
If you averaged Fitzy and Hart, we nailed the hell out of it. Oh. We should start setting lines in general. Is there money in that?
It'd be better than us betting on the lines.
Oh, my God. Well, some of us are doing fine. We'll get to that later in the show when we react to the pick six segment
here. I'm 2-0, so I was talking about you all.
Oh,
wow. Wow. So shots fired. The ball hawk coming at you.
So, Stiz, I know Adam Jones loves the term wish casting, I believe is how Adam. Is this wish casting by you, or do you think there is any shot? Because Bill Belichick, I put this in the email the other day. We never got to it. Bill Belichick is officially a candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year, and he goes into the coach contributor category. And one of the voters wrote a newsletter entry that said, not a lock to make the Hall of Fame this year, Bill Belichick, which stunned me. I don't know, as embarrassing as he's been and how it fell apart in New England, I don't know how Bill Belichick's not a lock for Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but he's still coaching.
But not really. It's called the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
He is still, his career is not over. His career is not over.
It is. He just doesn't know it. He's still working.
His career is, whatever you want to say, technically his career is not over. And so I would imagine that has something to do with if he's not inducted this year. I think that could be the reason. I watched Tom Brady retire and then come out of retirement and come play a year later. I do not think it's a zero. I would probably put it 30-35%.
You think there's a 35% chance Bill goes to the Dolphins?
I think Miami wants to win.
Wow.
Okay, everybody. Funny thing is, everybody wants to win. And yes, Stephen Ross has very deep pockets. But do you think Bill Belichick, with, you know, fully assessing how much the ego would, you know, of the ego stroke of getting back to the NFL would mean to him and how he'd love to prove everybody wrong, do you think he's going to look at that roster, which we mocked all day yesterday and have continued to poke holes in today, and say, oh, yeah, I can be back in the playoffs in 18 months with this?
No, he can't. He can't possibly. It's a bad roster. You know who I think has a better chance to end up jumping from college to the Dolphins to take that Dolphins job if McDaniel gets fired? That would be Kirby Smart.
I don't know who that is.
I don't even know if that was live or a drop.
Well done.
There's a lot of college coaches that might make that jump and take that opportunity to coach the Dolphins, I don't rule that out. I rule out Bill Belichick going to the Dolphins. The
100. So you're at zero.
I'm at zero.
Nick?
20%.
Oh, 20? Look at that.
That's kind of high.
Dan?
Split the difference. Give me 10. I think as much as his career may be over, I feel like the discipline side of things, given that McDaniel seems to kind of just let the inmates run the asylum.
He vaped on the sideline.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, and then tried to talk his way out of saying it was, it was just because it was cold. I was seeing my breath. Bull right. crap.
He literally vaped. It was in a playoff game in Buffalo, no less.
I like the setting the culture, setting the discipline idea of Belichick for a couple years to right the ship there.
Setting the Tua.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. Bill and Tua. Bill and Tyreek.
Oh, that's right. I could never Bill beat him, so I had to join him, Andy.
Yes.
I actually think Bill and Tua might get along in a weird way because Tua is accuracy and head and all that. And also Tua, and I don't mean to put this lightly or whatever, he's risked it all for football. Like, he's put his health and his legacy on the line for football. I think Bill would appreciate that dedication to the game that Tua brings to the field.
Yeah,
Bill Belichick has done it again.
Their names confirmed. Also both carry a lot more weight than what they actually bring to the football field nowadays.
Confirmed. Wow. Jimmy Garoppolo to the Dolphins.
You done. Are taking pot shots at Bill Belichick left and right.
Dan left
Ball,
and right?
Dan Ball had a tough weekend. He gets cranky over those tough weekends. He comes back firing. I've noticed this. I keep track of trends when I need to.
Really?
Dan Ball on Mondays has a case of the Mondays and takes a lot of pot shots at various teams.
I'm just calling it how I see it.
Okay, Stiz thinks there's a chance Bill Belichick could be the next head coach of
Chumming the waters, Stanley.
I actually want to do a little research now and see if there's any, you know, these online casinos that send you, like, most likely candidate to be next head coach of the Dolphins. I wonder if anybody's putting Bill Belichick in any of those conversations or if Stiz is the genius we think he is.
I got what this is. You know what this is? Honestly, Andy, Stiz now, because he keeps telling us he's trying to be more of a sports entertainer, sports journalist, sports fan. He just wants to see his name in one of those newsletters we get every morning that has all the aggregated storylines, and it's going to be producer calls for Belichick to take over Dolphins.
Stiz, WEEI Afternoons, Belichick back in the NFL in Miami. Don't say it couldn't happen.
Oh, I could see McAfee. Oh, McAfee's going to lead with that tomorrow. A block.
Oh, if he runs with it,
Roger McAfee on the Roger McAfee show.
We're going to have a problem if somebody runs with that because this is a Stiz original. For better or worse, this belongs to Stiz. 617-779-7937. We see you lining up to talk about a variety of things, even a subject line that says heart is fraudulent. We'll definitely have to get to that one. We also need to get to the Boston Red Sox. They almost had the sky is falling weekend that I worried about on Friday, but coming in on that white horse, the ace, Garrett Crochet, came in to save the day. A little Red Sox talk and where they lie. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
I just think he's going to go after a big name. I can't see him going after whoever the hot coordinator is for the Broncos or the Texans or whatever. But Bill would have to be pretty intrigued if the owner wanted him because he'd get to play the Patriots, right?
That's right.
He clearly despises. So, yeah, maybe.
That was the Colin Cowherd show, apparently, where Stiz stole his 3-point stance.
I did not. We found that after.
The Dolphins potentially having interest in Bill Belichick. I certainly believe Bill Belichick would have interest in the Dolphins because I think he would cut off all kinds of things to be in the National Football League again and have a chance to stick it to the world, stick it to Kraft. I just don't think it's going to happen that way. Speaking of sticking it, was very close over the weekend at Fenway Park. WEEI Afternoons was in attendance on Friday night. Still waiting for the ball that Judge hit to land. Boy, did that go out.
That was wild.
Fitzy, I used the line from Anchorman. I'm not even mad. Watching that ball leave, I couldn't be angry as a Red Sox fan. I was just like, I'm witnessing greatness. Like, Aaron Judge is an all-time great, and he just crushed a ball. That's kind of cool.
He hits home runs the way we only wish we could see happen from people wearing Red Sox uniforms. He's spectacular. It is watching him. It is special, and it is like watching, like, What if Gronk knew how to hit a curveball? It's unreal how he's so freaking large and hits the ball. He's got such a beautiful swing for a righty, too.
My first Yankees game, and I got to see an Aaron Judge homer.
He's such a cute
little
boy.
Did you buy the T-shirt that said that?
And almost a no-hitter, kind of. Well, it was on its way.
It was going to be until the Yankees gave up on it, and then everybody else gave up on it, and it sucks. That's modern baseball, but we don't have time for that. The Red Sox lose Friday. The Red Sox lose Saturday. And that meant the biggest game. I've seen this described this way, and it's hard to argue with the way his career has gone. Maybe the biggest game of Garrett Crochet's career. Taking the mound Fenway Park yesterday. Now, thankfully, the offense helped him by scoring 6 runs in the first inning. And then never scoring again. We got back to those. Remember the early season when they would do that? They would score early and be like, yeah, our work here is done. We won't need more than 6, right? You're good, Garrett. Well, they were good. They got the victory, even though he gave up a couple long balls. The bullpen gave up a long ball. We got my guy, Chapman, back to looking like my guy after a couple human performances. You salvage the series. You don't get swept. But things aren't exactly cruising along. And you know how I know that? Because shortly after I, on Friday, acknowledged the possibility that I didn't think was a possibility of them missing the playoffs, the manager went out there and said, yeah, we should probably stop talking about October and just focus on September right now. And I think that was an acknowledgement of everybody had kind of penciled the Red Sox in to the postseason and suddenly realized, hey, the Rangers are winning a lot of baseball games. This was that audio from Alex Cora.
I think we should stop talking October. To be honest with you, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we have to play better. You know, I'm not saying we're in a bad spot, but I think, you know, we have to wait, you know, to see if October is part of this.
You do have to wait, and you would have been having a lot tougher conversation today had they lost yesterday. Had that game either not gone well, gotten away from them, the runs piled up, they came back, because the Yankees kept chipping away. That 6-0 lead didn't stay a 6-0 lead. It was like getting closer, and you're getting a little uncomfortable. Anxiety was creeping in, and yet the Red Sox got the job done. So, Fitzy, how are we feeling about the local baseball team right now? Are they definitely going to be playing games in October?
No.
Whoa!
I think you actually have to come to terms with the possibility, not the reality, but the possibility that the Sox may get nipped at the heels and somebody may pass them. Now, it did help that Texas finally lost a game or two after they'd been playing white-hot baseball for a while as well. But, yeah, Andy, like you got to own up to it. Like, there's a logjam for the wild card, for the second and third wild card spot, and because the Red Sox offense has, by and large, gone in the toilet ever since Roman Anthony went down with the oblique injury. Oblique. That's all, folks. A couple weeks ago, it's a problem. I mean, and Willy Abreu taking way longer to return than people had anticipated. There are two of your four most potent bats in the offense. I know Bregman got a ding-dong over the weekend, but his bat has been dormant for the better part of a month, and you can't expect Jaron Duran and Nate Eaton and Nathaniel Lowe to basically carry the offense while the pitching staff just tries to keep bailing out water. It's a tough spot. Excuse me, I apologize. It's a really tight spot they're in right now. If they make the playoffs, I still think they do, if I had to go one way or the other. If they do, it's more of a hang on as opposed to leap into the postseason.
Yeah, and it's starting to feel like the division is out of hand. You're no longer going to win the AL East. And it's starting to feel like the number one wild card seed isn't feeling all that great. It's like, now we've reached the point, just get in. Just stay one of the wild card teams. Yep. If you have to go to Yankee Stadium, sure, I'd rather have games being played at Fenway Park, but if you have to go fight the Yankees on their field, okay, you'll have a puncher's chance with Crochet. And they did make an announcement today, Dan Ball, about the rotation for this A's series. They're taking advantage, Dan Ball, of the off day. Our guy, Peyton Tolley, getting skipped in the rotation, basically. And Early is going to jump in there, and then we're going to go back to Giolito and Bayo. And this has an eye, Dan Ball, correct me if I'm wrong, this would also align with Garrett Crochet being ready to open a wild card series?
Yeah, that is my understanding as well. And I think it's just a suggestion that, you know, Tolley had an incredible debut and since then has shown he's going to need more than a fastball and a cutter to be good at the major league level. So you get some rest for guys who have a lot on their plate. And it's a compliment to Connelly Early because he deserves another trip around the rotation.
Yeah, he hasn't screwed up yet. Like Peyton Tolley, you know, had the great open and then looked more hittable and came down to earth. I think I'll call him Peyton J.J. McCarthy Toley for now. We'll see which guy actually has it, if either actually has it. I'm just saying.
Poor guy.
And that's
Look, he was wild in Arizona. Then he kind of got knocked around in his third appearance. Maybe it's Andy, maybe it's time to give him some sixth and seventh inning reps.
Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Jamal in the car has a problem with me, doesn't everybody? What's up, Jamal?
Andy, you are a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
What?
Dirty. That was a dirty, dirty move you just pulled. Don't sit there and say you didn't just tell your producer, oh, we got to go with the Red Sox real quick before Jamal gets on the phone so I can refute his... He's calling me fraudulent.
Yes, he did, Jamal.
So why am I fraudulent, Jamal?
Classic.
Because I called when the Red Sox were on that 10-game win streak about 2 weeks before training camp started, and I was talking about how, oh, man, the Red Sox better keep it going because if they don't, they're going to get taken over by the Patriots. You guys are trying – you guys – Andy, I need you to give me my props. Tell me I was right because the excitement is more for the Patriots than it is for the Red Sox, even if they make the playoffs.
On this very day, Jamal, on this very day, and thanks for the call, the excitement is more for the Patriots, recency bias, than it is the Red Sox. I think, I mean, that audio from the manager sort of says it all. That's the talk radio version of pump the brakes. We need to pump the brakes on playoff talks because we might not actually be in the playoffs. I will give him credit, though. Do you remember when he did that with us, Fitzy, when I asked him a very specific question about extra bunting practice before a game? And I said something to the effect, is that with an eye on October? And he goes, no, that's with an eye on September. Ooh. And I give him credit. He knew this was going to come down the wire because you know what he probably looked at? We were talking about, well, you have every opportunity. You play the Yankees. You play the Blue Jays. You play the Tigers. And he's probably thinking, we could also lose to the Yankees and the Blue Jays and the Tigers. That's a tough stretch down the stretch there.
Yeah, and the Athletics.
So, well, if you lose to the Athletics, you don't belong in the playoffs. If you lose, if you don't take 2 of 3 in this series with the Athletics after this off day today, if you don't take 2 of 3, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs. I don't want to hear anything about it. I almost said they're the Oakland Athletics. They're not even the Oakland Athletics. They're the minor league Sacramento Athletics. So you need to win 2 of 3, or I don't want to hear one person crying, whining about anything. You deserve to miss the playoffs if you don't take 2 of 3 in this series, Fitzy.
Any anxiety over Brian Baio's start against the Yankees? It wasn't like Giolito was hard on himself after the game Friday night. He gives up the towering mammoth home run to Aaron Judge, but otherwise settled down pretty well. Five hits, a run. Any concern about Baio, who's looked a little shaky-ish in a couple starts recently?
Not really. I think he's been pretty consistent, and I think he's been pretty dominant against the Yankees. He was sort of due for that to not be the case. But that's the reality. It's such a fine line with them because they're riding the pitching. The lineup is non-existent. The offense is non-existent. And we're all going to have to hold our breath, cross our fingers, and yes, Dan Ball.
Just real quick, in 3 starts in September for Baio, 5.63 ERA. So maybe that is something to monitor there.
Everything is something to monitor with this baseball team. They don't have an offense. They don't have depth in the rotation, and they're sputtering. Sput. You ever hear those planes that are practicing in the sky, and you're like, did he turn the engine off? Are they sputtering? Is he going to be able to get that back on? That's the Boston Red Sox right now. 617-779-7937. Coming up, we need to break down the Patriots win. We got to all the good things. We talked about the offense and the sacks and the good plays, the big plays, the special teams. We do need to acknowledge that there were some things that were less than ideal in that game, even if the head coach doesn't agree. Because something I said on the postgame show, Fitzy, is apparently 100% wrong. We'll check in on that next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.